having deja vu all over again. It's been a while since I've been here. For those of you who don't know me, I was the pastor here, the associate pastor here from 2010 to 2013. My first 3 years in ministry with David Erickson as the senior pastor. And still some of the happiest times of my life in ministry. So it's wonderful to be back here again to see many of your faces. We've gotten a bit greyer. And my goodness, the kids that I left behind are now adults. And I'm feeling very old today. But it is wonderful to be here. And I still watch on Turner Online whenever I get the chance. I should let you know that. Don't be nervous, but I really enjoy still checking in because I feel like One Turner is my home church still. Is that strange? So it's nice to be back here to preach again. For those of you who don't know me, and for those of you who do know me, you might wonder what's happened to me since then. I left here, went to Ararat and Stall and Hamilton Church, where I was for 5 years. I wasn't being punished. I wasn't being cast to the outer darkness or anything. It was a wonderful rural ministry, and we loved it. And then we were brought back into the city, where I ministered with Warren Pratt at North Point Church, where Wendy is now, actually. So I was there before Wendy went out there. And then I went to Plenty Valley Church and looked after West Point Filipino Church as well. And then only 1 year into that service, I was asked to be the Ministerial Association Secretary, which is what I'm still doing today. This is my fifth year in that role. So I work at the conference. I don't know how you feel about that. But my role is to care for the pastors. The pastors are my church now. And I don't have a church of my own. I look after them. All 86 field pastors across 120 churches and 11,700 Adventist members across Victoria. But I'm lucky because I don't have my own church. I get to preach wherever I'm asked. And so today I've been asked finally, after 11 years, to come back. I'm not counting or anything. And I did preach during COVID, but that doesn't count because it was online. Come on. So it's nice to be here. My wife Vanessa is here. My daughter Eliana, who is 16 at this point, is probably still asleep. Teenagers being teenagers. But she was very tempted to come. I think that's everything. I've caught you up with everything so far, right? Good. But it's good to see you all. I want to ask who the gardeners are here. I know there's some gardeners. Put your hand up if you're a gardener. The gardeners are always shy. Why are the gardeners shy? I don't know. They're always shy. It's a real gift. It's a real talent to be able to grow things. And I wish I had the same gift, being able to garden and to grow beautiful plants, to produce food from seemingly the soil and a tiny seed. It's astonishing. But it seemed from a very early age I had the opposite gift. So rather than having the green thumb, I had the dreaded black thumb. Plants that were given to me swiftly died as though trying to avoid my company. I didn't take it personally. I just accepted that that was who I was, a plant killer. The best thing I could do for plants was to avoid them. If you had a plant you didn't like, just give it to me. I would take care of it. And I guess growing up where I grew up, that's where I guess I learned that. It was not hard to kill plants where I grew up. And I know that I've talked a little bit about that with some of you. You remember I'm from Broken Hill. And this is a satellite picture of Broken Hill down the bottom. You can see it. Up in the sort of top left is Silverton. And I kind of grew up a little past Silverton. And it's one of the most arid areas of Australia. The dirt there is this rich red from the iron oxides in the soil. And it's red because those oxides break down under the intense heat of the sun. So the centre of Australia is literally rusting. That's why that is that colour. Very hard to grow anything. We get a short, sort of tough scrub across the landscape, and trees will pop up where the water will run when it does rain, which is maybe 2 or 3 days a year. It's hard to grow plants in hard conditions. You don't need to be a gardener to realise that. But it's also a neat allegory for our spiritual life, isn't it? That's why Jesus used plants and growing and farming so much. It can be hard to grow spiritually in harsh conditions. And we're going to talk a bit from Philippians today. And the remarkable thing is that Paul apparently wrote this book to the church at Philippi while he was in prison. There are some references in there where he says about being in chains. So in verse 7 in chapter 1, he says, "Whether I'm in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you sharing God's grace with me." Now, you would expect anyone else being in prison would write a very different letter. If I was in prison, my letter would be, "Get me out, help me now." I'd want one of those cakes with the files in it so they could get me out of the window or something. But not Paul, no. He writes a very different letter. And we're going to look closely. We're going to drill down at a few verses in Philippians 4 today. First one is verse 11. You can look in your Bibles. I'll have the verses up on screen. "I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances." All right. Just to give you some context, the church has given him some gifts. They've sent him some things that he needed in jail. Because prison back then wasn't like prison today. You didn't get, you know, three hots and a cot. It was rough. You were lucky if you got food. You had to have support from the outside to survive in these prisons. And so the church would sustain Paul when he was in prison. And he's saying thanks, but he says, "I'm not saying this, I'm not being grateful to you because I'm actually in need, because I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances." So what is this word here, content? Can you be content in prison? I wouldn't think so, right? In fact, it's one of those special words that Paul made up. Paul likes to make up words. He takes two Greek words and he sticks them together and makes a new word. Thanks, Paul. That's something for the theologians to argue over what it means. But here what he does, he takes two words. He takes the word for yourself and the word for sufficient. And he puts them together. And the translators say that means content. We would say self-sufficient. Right? That's a good translation, isn't it? Self-sufficient. That makes sense. If you're self-sufficient, you're in need of nothing from the outside. To be content is to be satisfied and sufficient within yourself without need of anything external. It doesn't mean isolated. Paul doesn't mean he's alone or solitary. He's just saying he doesn't need anyone else to make him content. In fact, he points out something in this verse, that he had to learn to be content. It's something that Paul had to learn. It didn't come naturally to him. It had to be taught to him. He had to change from being discontent to being content by the process of learning something that he didn't know, to put it very simply. Now, if you read Paul's writings, you'll definitely understand that Paul has reason to be discontent. The stuff that he's been through, he's got more reason to complain and be discontent than just about anyone else. He's been shipwrecked, he's been beaten, he's been jailed multiple times. We talk about us being persecuted in the church. Paul had it harder, didn't he? But he said he's learned to be content when he is in need. Although, interestingly, he says, "I'm not saying thank you because I am in need." Now, I think he's saying, "I'm not in need." And this is interesting. Well, it's to say, "I am in need, but I don't need what you have to give me to be content." His being content doesn't seem to be based on whether he's in need or not. And that's an interesting concept. And I find that interesting because we live in a culture right now of discontentment and dissatisfaction. Would you agree with that? I'll give you an illustration. My child comes to me. She's like, "Dad, I want TikTok." "Who's heard of TikTok?" I'm like, "What's TikTok?" "So all my friends are on it. I want to be on it too." I'm like, "No." I said, "No," straight away. Because you learn to do that as a parent. That's just, you don't know what it is. "Can I have something?" "No." Automatically. "Kids, I'm sorry, that's true. That's just what we do." But she kept on coming back like the widow to the judge. "Dad, I want TikTok. Can I have?" So I decided to look up TikTok. I investigated TikTok. I Googled TikTok. And I found out that if I got TikTok as well, I could link my TikTok account to hers. And I could monitor what she's watching. I could monitor how many hours she's on per day. I thought, great, good parental controls. Let's give it a trial. We'll get TikTok. So we both download TikTok. We create accounts. We link our accounts. I set some fair standards for her. Oh, my goodness, I loved it. I was the one on it. It was amazing. And I'm not, you know, boy, now you're thinking, boy, the kids are going to go home and ask me for TikTok. It's like any social media, isn't it? There's good and bad on there. There's traps and there's danger. But after about half an hour, and there's a lot of creative things, there's a lot of good Christian things on there, a lot of good Adventist things on there as well. But after half an hour, I got an ad. Right? I don't understand. Why is it trying to sell me a pill that costs $40 each? Yes, I looked it up. Why is it doing this? I don't know how it knew for a start. I don't sit around talking about hair loss. It just thought, oh, I know how old you are. I know what usually happens to men your age, right? So it started advertising to me. It's trying to create a feeling of discontentment. Yes? Of dissatisfaction. It doesn't know that I'm too cheap to pay $40 a pill for my hair. And it doesn't know that I can't see hair loss from the front, so I'm all good. Paul's learned to be content. I want to learn to be content. Don't you? More than that, Paul is writing and giving incredible spiritual gifts and insights and lifting up the people. He's not just content, he's putting out product and content, so to speak, in social language. How does he do that? My dad learned to do the same thing. And when I called the sermon my father's garden, I'm not talking about God. I'm talking about my dad. And I want to use him as an illustration, partly because he died a couple of years ago, and it's just a bit of an homage to him, but partly because when I started reflecting about his life, I learned a lot. Because my dad had to learn to do the same thing with this red dirt of the outback, and he didn't have a black thumb like me. In fact, the contrary. In my father's garden first came his lawn. Are there any lawn dads here? You know the lawn dads? They're out every weekend mowing, watering, clipping, seeding. I know the lawn dads. Let me zoom into our house. See, Dad worked for the water board, and we lived next to the reservoir, which was one of two main water sources for Broken Hill, Umbarumbica Reservoir, in fact. So we lived up on the top, and Dad's workplace was down the bottom. There's our house. Can you see the difference in the colour? Because while we sat on this rocky, dirt-strewn hill, all around our house was Dad's lawn, a verdant, green, lush paradise just made for kids' feet. We could head out and run around without shoes. It was this soft playground amongst the thorns and rocks to protect our feet. Pretty astonishing. I took it for granted, of course, being a kid. In my father's garden was this thing, this tap, and this thing that grew underneath it. It was one of those bush taps. It was like, I don't know if you know what I mean, but if you go to big camp, just out of nowhere, there'll be like a hose come up, like a steel rusted hose and a tap on the end. It was one of those. Who knows where the water came from? But this water would come out and it was above the red dirt and it would just, it wasn't great. It would drip, right? Drip, drip, drip. And this spiky plant, which I've now learned from other gardeners, was called an agave, grew underneath it. Drip, drip. Every time we turn on the tap, it would spike us, though. It was really annoying. You'd go to turn on the tap, ow, spike, every time. I'm like, Dad, we've got to get rid of this. What's the point of this stupid green plant? And it was living on the water that dripped out of that tap. We never watered it. It just survived on that drip, drip, drip. Then one day, after 10 years of inactivity, we walked outside. A stem had sprouted out of it, grew up 3 foot, burst into glorious colour, this incredible flower. Have you ever seen a plant do that? Some of you have. It was astonishing. A vivid purple bloom just reached for the sky. It stayed there for about a week, and then it dried up and dropped off. Even though that cactus was in need, and I hope you don't think I'm just standing here talking about plants, folks. I hope you're with me on this, right? Even with the little that that cactus had, it did incredible things and made great beauty. And I wonder, are you at the moment that plant? All you're getting in your spiritual life is just the smallest drip, drip, drip. Are you barely hanging on? Do people reach for you and you spike them? Paul goes on in verse 12. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. So here's a few things to dig into this verse to point out. First of all, Paul doubles down and reaffirms again that being content is something that he had to learn. He says, I've learned, and then he says, it's actually a secret. This isn't something that's obvious. It's not the kind of knowledge that a lot of people have. It's a secret, something you have to discover, something that most people don't share. I think today that is still true. Meeting someone who is truly content is a very rare experience. Most of us are not content. We've been told not to be. Paul says something very interesting, and he says it three times in this verse. He gives us a comparison. What it's like to be in need and yet have plenty, to be well-fed or hungry, living in plenty or in want. And when an author repeats something three times in one sentence, what's he trying to do? He's trying to emphasize it, right? He's trying to say, this is important. Pay attention. He's saying he's learned to be content in any of those circumstances. Catch the implication. It's not only those who are in need who learn to be content, it is also those who have plenty. Paul is a Jew amongst Jews, a Roman citizen. He probably came from a wealthy family. He knows what it's like to live amongst plenty, but also what it's like to live in need. And when he says it's not only those in need who are not content, but those with plenty, that may come as a surprise to you. In our world, we expect those who have plenty to be very content, right? And when we think about being content, we think, well, if I had a little more, I would be more content. And we expect the very poor to be dissatisfied with their lives and not content. But the truth is that is neither of those things are the case. It is simply not true. Now, here's the illustration that preachers love to use. Jack Whittaker. In 2002, he won the US Powerball. At the time, it was the biggest amount ever won, $314 million. Now, when you win a lotto, you can choose to either have a lump sum paid out to you or a smaller sum paid to you every month until you die. What do you think most people choose? The lump sum. Now, that means in America, at least, that it gets taxed. And so after taxes, he walked away with $113 million. Some of you are comparing those numbers and realizing that it was the tax office that really won the lotto. Now, Jack was already a business owner, already worth $17 million. he should be able to handle a little more, right? Wrong. He bought a Lamborghini. He set up a few trusts for people that he knew. And he looked after the owner of the store where he bought the winning ticket. But Benny would take out huge amounts of cash and drive around town in his Lamborghini throwing money out the window. He didn't know what else to do with it. Over the next 18 months, he got 250 speeding fines. Which I can imagine you might if you owned a Lamborghini. He took the police to court and sued them for it and claimed harassment. The next year, thieves stole a briefcase he was carrying that just happened to have $250,000 in it. You know, as you do, wandering around with $250,000 in a bag. Two people from his local restaurant were arrested because they tried to poison him so they could steal his money. He got so much mail asking for money, he needed to employ three people full time just to look through that mail and answer it. In 2004, his granddaughter's boyfriend overdosed at their house. He started giving his granddaughter pocket money. How much does a millionaire give to his granddaughter? Well, $3,000 a week was what he gave her. So what do you buy with that? Turns out you buy drugs with that. It did not end well. And I won't go on. You can look his story up if you like. But it turns out lottery winners are much more likely to be sued, much more likely to have health problems and to die earlier, much more likely to die of drug overdoses, and one third of them end up completely bankrupt, no matter how much money they had before. Having plenty does not bring contentment. Having little doesn't bring it either. I'm not trying to say you should all be poor, but what I am saying is that your contentment is not dependent on your external circumstances. I'm going to say that again because I worked really hard to make it rhyme. Your contentment is not dependent on your external circumstances. That's a big thought. Rich or poor doesn't matter. It's a secret. We have to learn it. And Paul has learned it. Remember the rich young ruler? Man. The rich young ruler. Three things we all want. Wealth, power, youth. You people, you're right with youth. You've got it. When you start losing it, you're like, boy, I could do with a little more of that youth stuff. Youth is wasted on the young, they say. But he's not content. And he goes to Jesus asking, what am I missing? Your contentment is not dependent on your external circumstances. Have you ever set a condition? I'm going to be happy when I get this car or live in this suburb, or my kids can go to this school or have this job. Then I'll be happy. And then you achieve that thing and you think, oh, I'm not quite there, so I better set something else. The next thing, the next thing. It's because there's always something else we end up needing. More conditions pop up, more things to make us discontent. And I can talk about finances. It's easier as an illustration, but there's other ways. Perhaps you have a need for emotional support. Perhaps you're lonely and you've got no one and you just want a few friends to be content. But perhaps you have plenty of friends, but then maybe you've got so many they just won't leave you alone. And boy, you just need some time to yourself to think, right? The grass is always greener, isn't it? The grass is always greener. And that's what we want. Maybe a desolate at church. Maybe you need to do more things at church. Maybe you feel unseen at church. Maybe you're the one who has three or four jobs and you're like, I want to be seen less. If we're trying to find contentment in those things, we're going to fail. We need to be content where we are. And I'm not saying just stay in hard situations. There's nothing wrong with moving a plant to better soil. But while we are where we are, God has got something for us to do. In my father's garden was an orchard. It wasn't enough just to make a lawn near our home. Downstairs, near where he worked, he built an orchard. And if you have a look, you can see the house over here. Down here is where Dad worked. So he used the water. He planted oranges, lemons, grapefruits, bananas, although we didn't get many bananas because the cockies would eat them. During you know, winter, my brother and I would pick oranges as big as our hands, and they would just drip juice. And whenever we had visitors, we would take them down there, and it was such a source of joy for Dad to give them a plastic bag, and they would just roam through and walk away with giant bags full of fruit. And you gardeners who grow things like that, you know, every church member I go to who's a gardener and I do a visit, I leave with a bag full of food. And they got this big smile on, in their hearts, and they hand it to me. I hope you still don't think I'm talking about fruit and trees here. Are you with me? Do you understand what I'm saying? Perhaps you like that little agave only getting drips, but perhaps you're in an orchard, carefully tended, fruiting incredibly. In that case, it's our duty to what? Share the fruit. My dad knew how to be content and to grow and fruit where he was. How does Paul do it? Of course. I can do all this. You know this verse, right? Through him who gives me strength. In context, he's saying, this is the secret to being content. I can do all this being content. That's what he's saying. I can be content through him who gives me strength. When I don't feel content, Christ is the one that gives me strength. When I feel alone, Christ is the one who gives me strength. When I'm overwhelmed, Christ is the one who gives me strength. Christ is to be the source of our contentment, not ourselves. That's pretty clear, right? He can't do it alone in his own strength. He's achieved his contentment through the one who has given him strength to do it. Wherever you've ended up in life, you can be content and grow because it doesn't depend on your external circumstances. Your growth is an expression of your faith in God. And that is untouchable. Your relationship with Jesus is inviolable. If the solid bedrock of your life is Jesus, you cannot be moved and you will be content, and nothing can make you discontent. If we're resting our contentment on him, nothing can separate us from the love of God that is in Jesus Christ. I'm going to skip past that one because I can tell I'm heading towards midday. Has anyone ever eaten kwandongs? One, two. Whoa. In my father's garden were some kwandong bushes. It won't grow in Victoria. If you're wondering how to say it, it's kwandong. Usually someone's giggling. It produces this rich, round, red fruit about the size of a lychee. Inside, you can see it's mostly seed. We used to play conkers with it. It's a pale yellow flesh, and they are an incredible source of vitamin C, bursting with antioxidants. They taste kind of like rhubarb, like they've got that sort of sour, umami, sweet thing going on. They're incredible. You won't find them in Coles or Woolworths, I'm sorry. If you want to go to Broken Hill, you'll find some. You can eat the fruit raw off the trees, or you can dry them and keep them for years. But what my dad would do is once a year he would do a big harvest, kick mum out of the kitchen, and he would put them in a big pot. He would stew them up and pour in that white granulated sugar until it was hot and sticky and bubbling. He would pour it into this pie crust, put a crust on top, poke a little smiley face in it, sprinkle it with sugar, and pop it in the oven. And then it would come out and he would serve it to us with cold vanilla ice cream. When I moved away from home, I started looking for kwandongs, couldn't find any. They grow in a very specific area in Australia. I looked for trees to try and grow some, but they don't grow anywhere else, really, apart from that arid land. They are very hard to propagate. Why? Because it turns out they are hemiparasitic. When a kwandong tree grows, as its roots sink down, they join and merge with the roots of neighbouring trees. because their roots don't go that far, they can't drink that much water. But when they twist around the roots of the tree and the tree's roots go deep and drink from the water underground, when the tree drinks, the Kwandong bush gets a drink. Are you with me? You don't think I'm still talking about plants, right? Good. This makes the tree very hard to grow commercially, but perfectly suited for difficult conditions. It makes this bush drought resistant. It survives soil with high salinity. It doesn't just grow in harsh conditions. It thrives in them because it gets its water from outside of itself. This is the Australian version of the vine and the branch. So, as Paul says, it's the one who strengthens us when we drink deep from the living water of Jesus Christ. We will find we are suddenly content. Now that I'm older, I realise why I have a black thumb. I just never bothered watering my plants. I was no good at it. I thought plants could just put them outside, it'll rain, and that's all they need, right? Naturally, great. No. They need attention. And I think about how my dad cared for the lawn, watering every day, moving the sprinkler a meter every hour, making sure the whole lawn was covered in water. He put in automatic watering systems in the orchard. He would prune the Kwandong trees to get the parasites out. We need a little bit of attention like that as well, don't we? We need to be sure we're connected to the living water. And if you're in your life and your day and you go, oh, where's my contentment gone? Check that connection with the living water. Maybe you're only getting a little drip, but you can still bloom. You can still flourish. Maybe you're in an orchard. Maybe you're fruiting. That fruit is for others, isn't it? Don't just keep it for yourself. It's to share the gospel with the world. I think you get my meaning today, yes? And now normally we'd finish with an appeal. You know, at the end of a sermon, we're taught at college, aren't we, Daniel? You have to finish with an appeal. You must always finish with an appeal. But, you know, while preparing the sermon, I thought an appeal is kind of my way of making you feel discontent. And I don't want to do that today. But what I do want to do is do what Jesus did and invite you to drink from the living water. If you're thirsty, he says, drink. And there will be a wellspring of eternal life in you if you drink from that living water. We're going to have our final song now.